May take a quick snapshot of the defense. Little shovel pass here to Henry. Henry at the gut. What a play called by Alex Van Pelt. Henry already involved. It's a pickup of 14. First and goal, Pats.
Well, listen, hey, you got a little decoy here. That's Marcus Jones. He's the Patriots defender. So they put him in the backfield. He draws the attention, and then they just flip it inside to Hunter Henry. So Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator, using a little bit of personnel adjustment to get the Colts defense off balance.
WEEI Afternoons back here live, Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and F-Series. Hurry in for your last chance to get employee pricing for all during the Great American Sales event. About a half hour from now, we'll talk a little Red Sox, Brian Baio on the mound against the Blue Jays here at Fenway. We'll talk to Mike Monaco, who's stepping in, I believe, for Will Fleming, WEEI, tonight in the booth.
Yes, sir. That's right, today and tomorrow.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, we'll be
Will
talking
gets
to him
a couple
from
days
the...
off tonight.
Yeah, Will needs it. Well, this has been a trying season, a trying first half for Will. He needs a little step away, get your mind right, get the grind right so you can get back, and maybe they'll win a couple and he can come back with some positivity. So around 4:30, we'll talk to Mike Monaco. But there's been all these little Drake May little snippets. We know he got married, so that's great. Then we saw the photos of him with all his groomsmen, basically a offense.
Yeah.
That was a,
doing
that was a
the
cool
Flacco
photo.
Thing.
Yeah.
Then we had this audio of a couple different audios actually making the round. First was the audio of Josh Allen talking about him and talking about he sees the – because we've talked about Drake May, Josh Allen comparisons for a while.
Which I've never really seen that one as much, but that's the one he gets compared to the most is Josh Allen.
Oh wait! Can
even
Ted,
though I
can
don't
I, can I
quite
ask
see
real
it
quick?
That way,
Can I ask the former football player? Excuse me, professional football player in the room.
Go ahead.
When people make that comp, how do you not see it? Like, oh, meaning, I'm not questioning your football acumen. I'm meaning
he's not the same. He doesn't have the same size, and he doesn't run. Excuse me. He doesn't run like Josh Allen runs in the open field.
Okay.
And they don't. They don't even have design runs for him. Like, I mean, what they did at the very end of the season, they basically said, okay, we'll let him sneak a ball.
Right.
But they didn't utilize him that way. I don't think he has the same kind of running style mentality. And I don't think he's as big and stand as tall. He stands really tall. I like all his fundamentals look great to me. But I feel like Josh Allen is a lot bigger quarterback.
Yeah, he's a lot bigger, and you're right. Josh Allen's closer to sort of the Cam Newton days of, I'm a fullback, I'm going to run you over.
Yeah, Steve McNair.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Bigger.
Even Elway to a degree, that bigger guy that could run you over.
Yeah.
Yeah, Drake May can run. But he's definitely a guy that doesn't quite, but who knows? He also, I mean, 3 years from now when he's in an NFL program in nutrition, he's a young guy.
I don't know.
He's still growing.
There's 1 inch and 10 pounds difference between the two of them now.
Right.
Well, it's just, but look, okay, Drake May, he gets hit. He gets concussed. Josh Allen lays dudes out. Like, so he doesn't need to be playing like Josh Allen.
So Josh Allen told SI, I think Drake is super talented. He's one of my favorite young quarterbacks in the league. I've spent some time around him, and he's got his head on his shoulders the right way. He just does things the right way. I think that he exemplifies football. He'll take it and run. He'll throw it. And to have someone like Stephon Diggs is going to help him out a lot. Obviously, Josh Allen has been on the Stephon Diggs side of things previously. And that was a question, remember? Like, oh, can Drake handle dealing with Stephon Diggs? Josh Allen got bitched at by Stephon Diggs. But that's some pretty high praise from Josh Allen looking at Drake May, and especially the part about just, what did he say, he gets it or he just does it the right way. Fitzy, that's going to make you feel good about that praise, especially with the two guys sort of being compared.
Yeah, it does. And Andy, it goes into exactly why we saw Brian Daboll veritably gushing on that, sadly now, lone in-season Hard Knocks or preseason Hard Knocks behind the scenes with the New York Giants. If Brian Daboll was the man who helped mold the raw Wyoming clay of Josh Allen from talented, tall, strong gunslinger into one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL now, if not the last 25 years, then you can see why he would have gone gaga for Drake May as well. Strong arm, great on the design runs, agile, nimble, quick, the processing speed. It's all there. I'm not putting, and Ted, I want you to know this as well, I'm not putting And, you know, Allen got his concussions early, too. He's become a much smarter runner as time has progressed, and we hope Drake May does that as well. I'm not putting – I can see the physical comp and why people say one reminds one of the other, or, Drake looks like he may be Allen-esque one day. I'm not putting him anywhere near that level until I see a couple of accomplished seasons at the pro level healthy with more wins than losses, because late in season two is when the NFL – unlocked and Josh Allen saw through the matrix.
So if we're going to stick with the Drake May comparisons, Pro Football Focus put out an interesting tweet this week that has comparisons for all the second year quarterbacks, all the guys that came in last year and played.
Dude, this is crazy.
You like this, huh? Because this is controversial.
Yeah, so, this is
I'll start it off before I get to Drake May. So this is comparisons, ceiling and floor for Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, and Bo Nix. Okay. All the first-round quarterbacks from last year. So let's start with Caleb Williams. Brian Ferzocco, I'm not sure he liked to read this one, the Bears fan that he is. Caleb Williams, the ceiling is Jordan Love. That's the ceiling for Bears' second-year quarterback, number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. Okay. The floor is bust. Just flat out bust, they said. So they didn't even give a player. They just said bust.
What would you call that? What would be the bust? You'd call it the old San Diego Chargers.
Ryan Leaf.
Jamarcus Russell.
There's a couple of those real bad busts.
Yeah.
So let's go to Jaden Daniels.
Okay.
Ceiling, Lamar Jackson. Okay. I actually think his ceiling might be a little bit higher than Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson, that's their
holy comp ceiling. Holy smokes.
I do, because I think he's a better passer than Lamar Jackson entering the league.
So who would you put him up with?
I don't know that there is one. I think his ceiling.
He's in his own.
I think his ceiling is becoming the new ceiling for future quarterbacks that are built like him and play like
him. Interesting. Okay.
His floor is Kyler Murray, who is a, got a second contract, whatever it is, $200
million. Still a very serviceable quarterback.
Pretty good floor right there.
Yeah.
Do we want to do Drake May next, or do we want to save Drake May for last? Okay, so let's go Michael Penix Jr.
Oh, I like this one.
Down in Atlanta.
Got a great arm on that kid.
Big arm, ceiling. Justin Herbert, big arm, doesn't win a damn thing, but got a big arm. Floor, Jameis Winston. So Jameis Winston,
30 touchdown guy.
He's not going to throw that many interceptions.
I was going to say, is that he's a 30 interception guy and a 5,000 yard passer?
But Andy, he's going to be marketable AF, and he's going to be everybody's favorite soundbite.
Sure, and he'll be a great backup somewhere. I love his speeches.
I love the way he throws the ball.
You're a Penix guy, huh?
I'm a huge Penix guy.
That's Penix guy. She's a huge Penix guy.
One letter makes all.
I was,
yes.
And Ted
rolls right.
Ted, full disclosure. Ted, full disclosure. Back when we were working the nights and we hadn't forged the Voltron of WEI afternoons, I was all for, instead of taking May at three, moving back a little bit, trying to acquire extra first round capital and taking Michael Penix. I'm a big fan.
If you were watching me give my analysis that night, you would have said, "Hey, Ted." Ted agrees with me.
Yeah, and guess what? You're both wrong.
I said, it would have
taken some big balls.
Yeah.
And you would have had to thread the needle.
Yep.
And you would have had to risk some stuff. But that would be, to me, my ideal situation, the scenario for the Patriots to play out. It didn't, because, it was too risky. And I like Drake May. I still like Drake May. I think Penix, there is a winning quotient, a winner kind of thing to him that's a part of his game.
So J.J. McCarthy was the next quarterback taken. Obviously, he didn't play last year. He missed the entire year on IR. But his ceiling, this is some high praise, and I think
Baker Mayfield.
No. Much higher. Much
Tom
higher
Brady?
Ceiling.
Ooh.
Joe Burrow is his ceiling.
That is out of control.
That is high in terms of high
Joe Burrow's
ceiling.
Joe Burrow's the best quarterback in the NFL. Get out of here.
Yeah. You can argue that. And the floor is Sam Darnold, who's a weird floor because he was a bust until he wasn't a bust anymore last year with Minnesota, like that whole thing.
But he'll play 12 years in the NFL.
Right.
And 12-year career.
And then before we get to Drake May, the last first-round pick, we know Bo Nix with the Broncos. Ceiling is Drew Brees, which was a common pre-draft comparison.
Great one, yeah.
Sean Payton, that's why he fit there with Sean Payton. But his floor, you ever hear of this name? He might sound familiar. Mac Jones.
Oh.
That's not very nice.
Drake,
can we get some Mac Jones drops right now?
Ted, don't you already feel like what you saw last year, people talked about how good the synergy was, master and apprentice between Josh McDaniels and Mac Jones year one, go to the playoffs, giant roster, all that money, et cetera. And then it fell apart when they did Andy's favorite thing, reverse engineering the offense and putting Patricia in as OC. But don't you feel like you saw more out of Bo Nix in his first year with Sean Payton than you did with Mac Jones and Josh McDaniels? Because I'm convinced they're a great match.
Yeah, you know, I just got to keep working and got to get better. You know, I'm just going to keep working hard and we're just, yeah, everybody together. And yeah, it wasn't my best and I got to be better.
Doesn't that just give you so much confidence to hear that voice?
It does not.
That's all. Yeah, was it Bo Nix? Okay, look, you're right. You saw Mac Jones, especially, and I saw it trending really positively. I kind of came away with Mac Jones, impressed with Mac Jones in that first camp, I'm not going to lie. Rookie year, Cam Newton's a big personality. Mm-hmm. He's a favorite in the fans. The head coach loves him. And, yep. You know, the players respect him. And so he's got to overcome that. I thought that was tough to overcome. Just being, you know, kind of on a Belichick staff and working with a Josh McDaniels is tough. And I thought he had a really good rookie campaign when you kind of consider what he had to go through to get, you know, Bill wasn't like a buying in early on. So
Kim Jam.
He earned it, man. But to answer your question, I think Bo Nix has got this natural leadership thing.
He's wired better.
He's just wired.
Yep. More for the position. 40. But I do believe he is wired better. So, okay, we got those comparisons. We can quibble and discuss those. But the most important one for us, I am definitely going to quibble about because I don't care for it. Drake May.
Yep.
Ceiling. Trevor Lawrence.
College Trevor Lawrence?
That's unbelievable.
Floor. Daniel Jones.
Same player.
Wow. Trevor Lawrence
not terribly different. Correct, Dan Ball.
Trevor Lawrence?
If that's really Drake May's ceiling, we got a problem.
Oh, big time.
We're porked.
Screwed, brother.
Absolutely.
No chance.
And I don't think it's true. Like, to me, right there, ceiling. Josh Allen. Put it there. Like, do one of the... Like, the ceiling is a guy that most people think the Jags currently regret giving a contract to. That he hasn't become what he was supposed to be in terms of the number one overall pick and a true franchise quarterback. I hate it.
The only thing, though, that scares me is if you think about it, I mean, Trevor has, I thought, special athletic traits, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was really kind of, he just didn't have the mental makeup or the mentality that it takes to maybe be a franchise player. And that's kind of what we're all trying to figure out with Drake.
Yes. You know,
it's kind of like, hey, he's special talent. He didn't come in with the same kind of, you know, whatever, fervor that Trevor Lawrence did. But the point is, it's not the craziest thing to compare and say that's his ceiling if you think about it. But you're also saying that he's never going to, you know, ever figure it out like Trevor Lawrence hasn't figured out. That, but again, they're saying it's similar mindset, so maybe they are saying it. I don't know, but it's an interesting comp, and
it is,
to say the least.
I think one of the differences, even though we're talking about the makeup, like sort of the mental, like we can see physical tools, but how are they going to deal with the ups, the downs? Drake May dealt with downs in college. Like he never... Trevor Lawrence was the most dominant high school / college quarterback or one of that ever lived. Yeah. I think he lost
his freshman year was insane, Andy. His freshman year was incredible.
High school, everything. He lost like 3 times in his whole life before he got to the NFL. Whatever the number is, it's a really small...
Cam Newton story.
Right. And now you get to the NFL and you're not winning and it's not coming easy and you're losing and people are questioning you. And Drake May dealt with that last year at North Carolina with Mac Brown and a new offense and a new offensive
line. Bad offensive line.
Yeah. Like, so he has been, and then the Mac Jones part of it is he didn't really deal with anything. He played 1 year at Alabama. They won the title. They were great. The offense was great. Sarkisian was great. So
you're basically saying he's never really had like a great staff with great supporting cast, with a great vision.
Right.
You know, going all the way back to college.
Correct. So he has like dealt with some of the trials and tribulations that could help him deal with this. I also think it's weird, and Dan Ball and I were talking about this on the car over, because I know Brian Fazoco didn't like either the floor or the ceiling, really, for Caleb Williams. Why was Caleb Williams the only guy
where's Brian? Is he around? Get on the mic.
Why was Caleb Williams the only guy who could be a bust? And it Mac Jones was a bust. Mac Jones was absolutely a bust in New England.
Are they saying that he, let's see, who the heck is the best is comp? Oh, Jordan Love. See, I would say you maybe think it's a bust because his ceiling's so high that it could just...
But I'm not even sure the ceiling's so high. Jordan Love's
terrible.
I think the ceiling is Patrick Mahomes.
Jordan Love's not terrible.
And he's not terrible, but this is a terrible comparison.
Right, right.
So it's not fair because he's in division and he can... first of all, I don't know who works for Polymarket in terms of, because this was put together by Polymarket Football, the gambling site that always gives you the odds for politics and certain futures in sports as well. I have no idea who their analysts are and their number crunchers and quants that came up with these comps as well. I don't think being compared to Trevor Lawrence, who may still have a higher ceiling in the NFL, guys, is the worst thing in the world. Being Daniel Jones would be positively ghastly for Drake May as well. And as far as Caleb Williams goes, Jordan Love, okay, that's something you should aspire to this year. That's maybe his 2025 ceiling. His ceiling could be much higher than that, especially working with Ben Johnson and the offense that this guy's putting together in his first year as a head coach. But to say that the guy might be a bust, what is he just going to do? Is that because of his emotions? Is that because he's weird and unique and different?
His father.
Yeah.
I think it's also to do with his father. I said this to Dan Ball. These other guys, like if Drake May busts out, or even Mac Jones, he's busted out, but he was the backup in Jacksonville. Now he's the backup in San Francisco.
I'm kind of curious to see how it goes in San Francisco.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
But his,
that reportedly that was the team that wanted to move up.
Three.
Yeah, three.
Yes.
Right.
But he can probably bounce around as a backup for 5, 6, 8
Easy.
Years.
Easy.
Caleb Williams with his dad, who remember the reports of his dad, A, didn't want him to go to Chicago.
Like
then when
partnership
he did,
of the team.
Ownership. Wanted part of the team. Then he wanted to do something in his contract that was borderline tax evasion and was going to get them in trouble with the IRS. Like that right. headache and extra, damn. That could make him a bust where teams just go, nope. Don't want anything to do with it. We don't want you as a backup. You have physical talent, but you're not worth
it. I feel like I haven't
it.
Heard anything in his rookie year. That...
I haven't, but yeah. we'll see. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. So I thought these were interesting comps, but the one that bothered me the most, honestly, was the Trevor Lawrence for Drake May. Because I think if the upside of Drake May is Trevor Lawrence, I'm
then
worried.
Then what was this whole thing for?
Yeah.
Right. Well, why'd we take him?
Yeah, Ted, let me ask you right now. Okay, you are the head coach of an NFL program. You just got hired. You have these are all free agents, and one of them will take your 5-year, $300 million bag that you would offer between Penix, McCarthy, Nix, May, Daniels, and Williams. Which one would you want the most,
brother? It's kind of a runaway because this is who I love coming in. I'm a big Jaden Daniels fan. I always have been, always was, and you know you saw how he played this year. He's a different cat. I just think I love his mental makeup. I love it. His playing style is so unique and fun, and I he's a special player to me. So that was my first choice. I was very enamored with Michael Penix, and I just was a little reluctant on Drake May. I don't think I really saw how special his traits were in college. I needed to see him here in a Patriots uniform before I go, oh, I see why he was drafted number 3 overall. He's got special traits to me. Does he have the makeup to be, you know, a championship makeup? That's still to be determined.
So those are your Drake May comparisons and NFL quarterback comparisons. Some people have said that this could be the greatest quarterback class of all time. We'll see if they reach the floors of those comparisons. They definitely will not be that. If they reach the ceiling, though, I'm not sure they even will be that either. Like, I don't know if Jordan Love for the Bears makes that a great number one overall pick or Trevor Lawrence for the Patriots.
Can we just agree that, you know, Jordan Love came in on a completely different hype train
yes.
than what Caleb Williams is coming in.
He came in,
So I feel like Caleb Williams is already kind of far ahead of Jordan Love, yet they have Jordan Love as his ceiling.
It's a very weird comparison for Caleb Williams. It's like they didn't really know how to go what direction and just do Jordan Love and we're done with the graphic and press send on it. 617-779-7937.
It's kind of fun to be talking football, though.
It is. It's fun to be talking football, and we'll continue to sprinkle in football. We had another what-if question from Twitter we might be able to squeeze in either later today or even next week. What's the biggest what-if in NFL history? We'll get to that. But up next, we need to talk a little Red Sox. We're at frickin' Fenway Park, and the Red Sox are home, and the Blue Jays are in town, and they're losing, and they need to win. And Mike Monaco will join us because he's going to be on the broadcast tonight for WEEI. So Mike Monaco here on WEEI Afternoons up next. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending. WEEI Afternoons, Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and F-Series. Hurry in for your last chance to get employee pricing for all during the Great American Sales Event. We will, in the next few minutes, be talking to Mike Monaco, who will be on the broadcast tonight for WEEI. I think he just finished up with Alex Cora's pregame media availability. So we'll see if we get any updates and information out of that.
I got a solid question I think I want to ask.
I hope so.
Can I test
Maybe
it on, can I test it on you guys first?
Okay, sure.
And I'll,
what if we tell you it sucks?
Well, then I won't ask it to.
Okay, go ahead.
So you're gonna help, you're helping me out here. What do you guys think in these 9-19 games? That they're 9-19 in one run games.
Yes.
Red Sox.
Not good.
Don't you think so? That it's a team that clearly has no room for error, has a small margins for error, right?
Right.
Which is crazy with how many errors they make, but yeah.
Right. So it's if margin for error, there aren't they an athletic team, correct?
That's supposedly what we've been told. Yeah.
That's what we've been told.
For yes. sure.
Doesn't that fit the mold of what a small ball team would do? Athletic, no margin for errors in a lot of one run games.
Got to manufacture runs.
Yeah. Yet they're the worst at small ball. Why is it that a team that needs to be a small ball team doesn't even know the first thing about being small ball, playing some ball ball?
Drive line.
Drive.
I know.
Drive line.
It's like watching the Celtics, though, with the three-pointer all year. It's like it's not – this isn't
You're
working.
You're not good at shooting the three. Why do you keep shooting the three?
No, yes.
No, it's like situationally, like we talked about in the playoffs when you blow those leads. Like – you can shoot threes certain times, but there's certain situational times you don't just have to shoot threes. And I think the Red Sox are – we talked about it the other day. We were talking about their strikeout rate and home runs. And sort of the idea is if with a lot of teams, well, we're swinging for the fences. The strikeouts kind of come with doing business that way. I think they've talked themselves into drive line, home runs, because they are a top 10 team in home runs, I believe, right now. But I think they've forced themselves into that world by – where then naturally, I'm with you, Ted. I think they're a young, athletic, aggressive, can run the bases, bunt, take an extra base here kind of team. But I don't know that Craig Breslow, Mr. Boston Globe, look myself in the mirror and the organization and Sportsology, his system, I don't know if you know, he fancies himself a systems builder, Craig Breslow. The system he has built with his boys from Driveline doesn't buy into what you're saying right now, doesn't believe in, because my guess is... analytical models say small ball's stupid. Small ball's same reason Joe Mazzulla shoots threes, because analytical models say three beats two every time if you shoot 37%.
That was a line in Moneyball. Never bunt.
Right.
Never bunt and rarely steal.
Okay, first of all, you should never say never. Stupid. I don't like any philosophy that says never do anything.
Okay, thanks, Dad. Got it.
Right?
Yes.
Why would you ever say never? And not like Trevor Story went 10 years without bunting
or
whatever the hell it was.
Right.
Like, yeah, always Joe Mazzulla, always shoot the three. No, don't always shoot the three.
Good lesson.
Yeah, life's lessons. It's the little things we do here when we're waiting for Mike Monaco to join us on WEEI afternoons.
Spewing life's lessons, man.
I liked your question, by the way, but if he has the answer to that question, he's in the wrong line of work. Because that is the question for the Boston Red Sox.
So I'm going to ask you.
It's a good question. It's absolutely. And there's plenty of questions with this baseball team coming off the losing streak and the Devers trade. And, you know, I feel like every couple weeks we talk about, this is a really big week for the Boston Red Sox, or this is a really big series, or this is a really big homestand, or this is a really big road trip.
But we mean it now.
I really mean, I think this is a big homestand and week for the Boston Red Sox.
You've got to go 4-2 at least over the next six to get back to 500. You can't continue, you've squandered all of the wiggle room. You have whizzed away all your chances to blow one-run games. You're 40-42. You start off the second half of the season with an L. I mean, they can't, what do they got, 2 weeks before the All-Star break? If you can't get a couple games above 500 before the All-Star break, how in the hell are you going to validate everything Passan and Heyman have said about the Red Sox being buyers?
Dan Ball, what you got?
So, yeah, to Fitzy's point, you have 16 games before the All-Star break. You get Toronto for three, Cincinnati for three, Washington, Colorado, and then four with Tampa right before it.
Okay.
I mean, those are...
got to go at least 10-6.
Got to go at least 10-6. Yeah, I feel like I shouldn't even say this phrase out loud, but those are a lot of winnable games that you have on that schedule.
But you know what I'm going to do? What I always do? I did this with the Patriots when we had our fight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think those other teams look at the Red Sox and go,
they do.
Those are winnable games against 100%. The Boston Red Sox. Like, the Angels are a perfect example. They got into the playoff picture because they played the Red Sox. Joining us now here on WEEI Afternoons and joining you on your broadcast tonight on WEEI of Red Sox Blue Jays is play-by-play man Mike Monaco. Mike, how we doing today?
Guys, doing great. It's good to be back at Fenway. It's been like a month for me since I've been here with the Red Sox, so eager to dive back in, and a lot has changed in that time.
Yeah, a lot has changed, and it feels like it ebbs and flows. We were just discussing. Feels like every week or two we're saying this is a huge homestand, this is a huge stretch of games, this is a huge, series, whatever it is. But is that even more true now? I mean, we're past the midpoint of the season. We got a, you know, the All-Star break and then the trade deadline on the horizon. Does this team need to get its ish together at some point? And if they're going to be what they keep telling us they want to be, which is a good baseball team, don't they need to get their ish together at some point?
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, you guys are exactly right. Like, how long does it feel like we have been saying that? and yeah, like, no better time than right now. But I do think, you know, the closer you get to the trade deadline, and we've all heard what Craig Breslow, who's down on the field right now watching the Red Sox work on the field, we've all heard what he's talked about in the last few days about adding and what he has said in the last 2.5 weeks since the Raffy trade. I do think it's important. And, you know, you guys just said it, and Alex Cora just said this when we talked with him pregame. Like, it's been up and down, and it has been a roller coaster. And, you know, you got to just pitch, defend, and run the bases well at first. And, you know, let's start with that and then kind of go from there. Sure. And I think cleaning up, you know, so many of the fundamentals and just, you know, ironing out some of those mistakes that we've all seen pop up here in this first half of the season, that would be a great starting point.
So, Mike, I've been told this is an excellent question to ask you, so I'm going to ask. The Red Sox are 9-19 and we in these one-run games, okay? But, and I sit here and I go, all right, so this team clearly has not a lot of room for error with all the issues that they're having. So small margins to win these games. They are an athletic team. And those two things right there, Mike, tell me, this is the team that should be better and more proficient at small ball, at managing runs and trying to, you know, manufacture runs in these tight games. Yet they don't adhere to that philosophy, and it maddens me. Is there something to that, or do you think the same way, or am I totally off on that?
No, I don't think you're off. And to be honest, like, and Alex has said this, Alex Cora, like, talks about wanting to play a different way. And he said it right away when Casas got hurt at the beginning of May, that immediately, you know, before Romy Gonzalez got hurt, that it was going to change the way they would play offensively. I think they want to do that. I think it really helps when you're getting on base at a high clip at the top of the lineup, when a guy like Jarren Duran is going at the best that we have seen, you know, in parts of the last few years. Not, you know, the way he's going right now the last 3.5 weeks, where, you know, it's a sub-200 batting average over that time. So I think you know, like, theoretically, I think it's a way they want to play, and they definitely do have the athletes to do it. And I mean, you look at what they have on the roster and what they can throw out there in any lineup, it's certainly a way they want to play. I mean, Duran's in there tonight. You got Rafaela's speed. You got Hamilton in there tonight. Like, there are guys you can do stuff with. Story, of course, when he's swinging the bat well and getting aboard. I think in theory it's something they want to do, but it comes down with getting aboard, like base runners. And again, it sounds simple, but yeah, start with that and then kind of let the offense take shape. I don't think it's going to be heavy sack bunting. Like, that's not the era of baseball that we're in, but it can be a tool in the tool belt for the offense.
Mike, obviously Will Fleming gets very emotional when calling the games. Probably good for him that he gets a couple days here to take a breath and step back in a season that is very emotional, unpredictable, and frustrating as well. He seems to really, you know, get bent out of shape by just about everything that happens. The home runs, the errors, the mental mistakes. So what is it about this team that frustrates you the most, that you would love to see, like, that first something, if you were in charge in the locker room, the first thing we need to eliminate is blank?
I think I'd love seeing good defense and strike throwing. So, like, you know, let's limit walks and let's play fundamentally sound defense, you know, wherever that is on the diamond. You know, outfield throws to the right base, you know, first base, you know, knowing when to come off the bag and let the second baseman handle the ball, or come off and field it yourself. Like, those types of things, I guess, are my pet peeves as a baseball fan, just in general. But yeah, there's many ways that I can't match Will Fleming, but that is certainly one of them. His baseball sense is really unrivaled, especially for a play-by-play guy. And I spent, you know, 3 years in Pawtucket with him and learning from him firsthand, and interned for him once upon a time, so I've seen it throughout. But yeah, he's got me beat in many ways.
Mike Monaco, WEEI's broadcast tonight of Blue Jays Red Sox, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Mike, I don't know if you heard the audio, but Craig Breslow was on the Greg Hill Show yesterday, and he admitted that looking at the issues in defense and base running forced him to look at the whole organization, and he realized at all levels we have issues with base running and defense, and they need to change some things developmentally. How concerning is that? That they are basically, we complain about the major league talent that they're not ready, but they're developing them in a way that they're not ready even at the level they're at. And how do you fix that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, I saw those comments. I kind of look at it a different way. I find it refreshing if someone admits, hey, like, we need to do better at this. And especially when it's like your processes that you're mm-hmm. self-evaluating and say that need to change. I think you can do it during the season, especially at the minor league level. Like, there is so much time, having spent 5 years in minor league baseball, there is so much time over the course of a season for individual and even team-wide instruction on what needs to happen, where it's a little bit different. You know, in the major leagues, like the Red Sox are hitting on the field right now. You're not going to see, you know, advanced base running drills at this point. You can go over those things for sure. And Kyle Hudson does a great job with those types of things. But I do think it's refreshing to hear, hey, you know, we need to take stock of where we're at as an organization. You know, I was just talking with Alex Cora down in the dugout about Brian Bayo's command. Like, it's been a lot better in June, and you can work on strike throwing. Like, it sounds like you're either a strike thrower or you're not. You either have fastball command or you don't, but you can work on those things, and they are young guys, and I know we're in a win now market for sure, and that's what the major league level demands at all times. But there is room, especially for the younger players, to kind of to grow and to learn new things when it comes to base running or whatever else.
Hey, Mike. So Rafi's been with the Giants for the last 9 games. And in those 9 games, their record is 3-6 with Rafi. I'm curious just your thoughts. I mean, do you think the Red Sox are a better team now that they don't have Rafi? What are your thoughts on just the impact he's having there and what it means to not have him on this team anymore?
Yeah, I'll take you guys back just to where I was when it went down with my day job at ESPN. I was out at the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska, and we were 3 minutes to air, and I got the first text 3 minutes to air that was just Devers and like 4 question marks, and then like 3 more popped in those 3 minutes. So I you know, like everyone, I didn't see it coming. To answer your question, no, I don't think they're a better team without him. I think there's certainly more flexibility, but look, man, like you take out that bat, we all know what he's been through the years. You take out that bat, and it's just a glaring hole in the offense for sure. I don't read too much into the first, you know, 9 games with the Giants and that sort of sample size. I mean, he's had some games where he's really swung it well. He had, what, 3 hits yesterday, I think. A couple extra base hits, a home run. So, I think it's a little too early to put stock into that. But, yeah, like, it is different. You know, like I said, like, I haven't called a Red Sox game in 4 weeks. And you fill out a lineup card, and even knowing what the deal was, man, it looks different, you know, not penciling in Rafi to the heart of the lineup.
Yeah, Mike, the Sox have 1 game with more than 5 runs scored, I believe, in the last 2 weeks. 5 runs feels like a dozen. 2 runs or fewer seems to almost be the 2 or 3 runs seems to be the norm now. You got the biggest and best bat supposedly now in San Francisco. Bregman won't be back until after the All-Star break. So if there was one guy this very young and sometimes sporadic offense could lean on as they try to get things going during this very pivotal pre-All-Star game stretch, who would you fancy that to be?
For me, it's Jarren Duran. I mean, like, we've seen what a better version of Trevor Story can do for the offense in June. But I just think, and like, Alex Cora has talked about this anecdotally, but I think the numbers bear it out if you were to really dive deep on him. Like, when Duran goes and when he's setting the table and when he's able to run kind of full bore on the base paths, the offense is just different. And, you know, I said it earlier, but kind of the stretch that he's been in here recently, you know, he's trying to get back in gear. He's 6 for his last 43 over the last dozen games or so. There's 1 stolen base in there. There's 3 extra base hits. Like, the offense is just different when he's humming and when he is kind of terrorizing people on the base paths and when every ground ball through the right side feels like it could be a hustle double. It's different. I mean, certainly we'd all like to see Roman Anthony get hot and be what everyone still expects him to be in short order after these first 2.5 weeks. Story, like I said, Abreu, you know, has a sense of being streaky, but the highs are very high. But for me, it comes down to Duran.
Mike Monaco, we can't pay you, but I'm going to ask you to be our correspondent. You said you were down with Alex Cora for his pregame media session. Some updates on Yoshida, Houck, Slayton, some of those guys that he had there?
Yeah, we're getting some, I would say, encouraging news. Like, Masataka Yoshida is still coming along. That stuff is encouraging to hear. Alex Bregman has started baseball activities. He did some hitting. Masa could go on a rehab assignment, it sounds like, early next week. Marcelo Meyer on the bereavement list. He's not going to be back, it doesn't sound like, until Monday. Justin Slayton, I think, is scheduled to play catch tomorrow, is what Alex Cora said. So I said them when we did our pregame interview that fans will hear coming up, I guess, in a couple of hours. But, man, like, the life of a manager is interesting. You spend so much time answering injury questions. It is crazy. Like, he's doing it pregame, postgame. He's doing it with knuckleheads like me. But, yeah, there's a lot to report. I do think the Yoshida stuff is encouraging. And, man, like, it's, you know, it's kind of been a running joke, like, where in the world is Masa? But you put that bat back in the lineup, I think we all have, and I've been guilty of this, kind of forget, like, at his best, what he's been capable of doing. Like, when he was first up with the Red Sox, when they made the signing, and down the stretch, like, he's had some really good moments. And I think the way you look at the lineup now, man, getting that guy back would be a really big boost for this offense.
Mike, before I let you go, I got to pass on the magic and gold that is our guy, Dan Ball. He said, you're officially our correspondent. You see what he did there?
Whoa.
You see what he did there? Yeah, that's classic dad humor for the youngest guy involved in this show. So I don't know what to make of that. Mike, have fun tonight on the broadcast. Hopefully it's a win. Hopefully it's some offense. Hopefully Bayo goes six like he's been doing. Let's have a fun night at Fenway Park. Can we agree to that?
I can agree to that, guys. Thank you for having me on for my maiden voyage. And I promise you I'll try to bring some Fleming caliber emotion tonight.
You do a great job, Mike. So keep it up.
Thanks,
man.
Mike.
Good luck.
A good one.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Mike Monaco, tune in tonight to WEEI to hear him on the broadcast of Blue Jays and Red Sox. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, it's also the night of the NHL draft. The Bruins have a top 10 pick. They also suddenly, sort of like Jaylen Brown and Derek White on draft night, there's suddenly these little trade rumblings for Pasta, David Pastrnak, rumblings coming out of Europe. Could he be going to... Well, I'm not going to tell you, but it's a team you're really not going to like that wants David Pastrnak. We'll talk about that up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
No, I think we have to have an eye towards the best player who, you know, when and if he gets to the National Hockey League. Obviously, you don't want the if, and that's the case when you're picking in the top part of the draft. You realize you have to take a player that you forecast of being, you know, having an impact, have the ability to impact the NHL lineup. That doesn't mean year one. Sometimes it's not even year two. You know, you get into year three and you're hoping that you know, the development has taken a natural course, but everybody sort of matures physically and mentally at a different rate. It's not a sprint. Right? You know, we want the longevity and the biggest impact we can find.
What? That's Don Sweeney putting Ted Johnson to sleep and honestly annoying me. Like, just you have a top 10 pick and you're downplaying it. You have a pick you traded that became a first-round pick in the Brad Marchand deal that's a couple years away, but now you're telling me I have to wait a couple years to make the pick, and then you're going to wait 3 years before you expect. Yep. So, like, 6 years from now, we'll get return on Brad Marchand's trade. You know what?
Man,
you know what Florida got out of Brad Marchand?
What's that?
Stanley Cup.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, this big cup thing. It's really cool. And then you drink a lot and you party and you have parades and you have fun and it's all joy.
Do you guys have a good response? I did. Can you go back, Stiz, and just play the very beginning, the opening comment from from Don Sweeney, just kind of how he leans into the how he starts the conversation. Just
no,
listen
I
to Don Sweeney.
I think we have to have an eye towards the best player.
It's like
when
it's
if,
like
no, I think we have to have an eye towards the best.
This is absolutely nuts.
No, I think we have to have an eye towards the best player.
So I'm just like, you know what? There's Don Sweeney. I almost wanted to tune out.
Thank you very much. So we have not discussed this.
No.
Dan Ball and I heard that audio when we were setting up in here at 1:30 and had this same gosh damn discussion and basically like his tone and his delivery is like, just like...
Does it get you excited?
No.
Nothing
it's freaking draft night. You have a top 10 pick. Yeah. You should be like, this is an opportunity for the next great Bruin to join the organization. Like,
So you like, as Don Sweeney, no. Andy. Let me ask you a couple questions as Don Sweeney real quick. Are you excited for the draft tonight?
No.
No.
Do you think you're going to draft a good player tonight?
No.
Are you excited about Marco Sturm being the new head coach?
No, Cam picked him.
Well, you guys have gone another level with it. But
life's not that bad, Don. You got a really cool job in sports, and it's about energy and effort and attitude and compete level.
It's the exact thing that this organization hasn't had with you at the helm.
It's so funny that struck you.
It did.
The same way.
No,
the same way.
No.
Do you think you'll be here in a couple years?
No, let's face it, though.
Hey, if you guys remember, but this is the Bruins. The season ends. They don't have a press conference until a week after the season, right?
Right.
What happened recently? They just hired a coach, and then they wait a week to announce the coach.
Yes.
Like, this is the Bruins.
Different pace. It's a different pace, eh? Yeah. It's hockey. It's from Canada.
It's unbelievable pace. That it's draft night in the NHL, and it's a Friday night, the weekend before 4th of July, just after the NBA. It's so typical NHL.
Just bury it.
Oh, jeez.
So it is draft night, Fitzy, which is okay. Mm. They have a top 10 pick. We'll see. Don's not that excited.
I got like 10 TVs set up ready to go. Oh, yeah. It's like a Buffalo Wild Wings in here.
Can I pat myself on the back for a second? I've never asked before, so why start now?
I was going to say, what's going to stop you?
I actually felt like I was doing really good show prep work the other night. Maybe Monday or Tuesday, ESPN had like a following the prospects of the NHL draft, like 2-hour show. You know, I watched it. I felt really proud of myself.
Wow.
I was learning about all these, like the kid from Canada, the kid from Long
Paint
Island.
Was done drawing?
No, wait. You're a hockey guy. Why are you making fun of me?
Well, teach it. What did you learn? Teach us something.
No, they're all the same.
Who are we picking?
I got no idea. He doesn't know. How am I supposed to know?
Leif Hockerson.
The kid from BC is good, and he might go to the Islanders. He's from Long Island, and there's this whole campaign there where they have magnets on cars, posters everywhere. Is it Hagens?
James Hagens, yeah.
Hagens.
Very good player.
So Hagens to the Islanders. Hagens stay home. They got this whole thing.
So, Dan, what is our top needs? What would you say our top needs are?
Everything. You got to add to the offense. You need to add a top six forward tonight if you can. I'm still rooting for trade down, trade out. Hopefully trade with Dallas for American forward Jason Robertson, point per game player. He needs a new contract. You have the flexibility. So if you can make that move, that's the move I would do.
Did you notice he just turned into Mel Kiper?
He's on the afternoons, that guy.
The American forward who's a point per game
American
guy.
American forward.
That was well done, Mel Kiper of hockey. So you think they need offense now?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. What if I told you that there is a report that has been confirmed out of the Czech Republic
by Rich
that
Keith?
According to at Denik Sport, which I've never heard of, but I don't follow a lot of people from the Czech Republic, so that would make sense. Florida. You ever hear of them?
Yeah.
Have you heard of them recently?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they won the Stanley Cup. They also did so with your captain.
Yes, hotbed, Florida.
Just okay, confirmed. Apparently they're not done pillaging this minor league organization that is the Bruins, that is a feeder system for other teams, apparently.
But they got new jerseys.
Florida has a great interest in David Pastrnak.
That's crazy. Crazy.
Obviously, the price is very high. Hey. Notice it doesn't say would be very high. It says the price is very high. However, Bill Zito is a wizard. He runs the Panthers. Has pieces to do that. Pastrnak has a no-movement clause, but it looks like that shouldn't be a problem.
This is interesting, actually.
What the hell is that?
It sounds crazy, Dan, but your first instinct, what is...
That suggests to me that if somebody in the Czech is speaking to David Pastrnak, which this happens with the European guys, like they will go home, talk to reporters in their native tongue and give more information there.
Hampus Lindholm did that. Like, isn't the reason why we found out he had a broken foot is because he went back and talked to like the Frozen Post and told them like, yeah, I played the season with a broken foot.
But, so NBA draft night, I was hearing rumors about Jaylen Brown being traded, right? It was everybody's bidding on Jaylen. Right. I'd be more pissed off at this. Like, 2 days ago, was it, that they unveiled their new jerseys with this fancy video and everything? Who was in the video?
David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy.
Okay, well, I would actually trade Charlie McAvoy if somebody wanted to trade for him.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. It sounds crazy, but would you listen to what they had to say? Or would you just say,
no,
don't even bother calling?
No, you're supposed to always listen, aren't you, Ted, if you're a GM?
I'll listen,
isn't that your job?
Yeah, I am.
Yes, I believe in that. You always listen, but...
Because the moves they made, you know, at the trade deadline last year suggested... They call it, what were they, not a reload? Yeah, a reload.
It wasn't a take
not a rebuild.
Down or a rebuild.
That is a rebuild if you send Pasta.
Yeah,
you're basically saying, we're not reloading, we're rebuilding.
Because he was the guy that Dan Ball kept trying to convince me was like a Hart Trophy candidate. He should be MVP, even though they stink. He keeps scoring all the numbers.
He was, but if you want to downplay that, that's fine.
Real quick, isn't stylistically he's like the opposite of what they want? Like he doesn't want to mix it up.
Muck it up?
He's a Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a non-traditional Panther just like he was a non-traditional Bruin.
But you know what? Scoring plays.
All right.
You can score. You can help a team. But it just... Wait, so the Panthers are just going to be picking and choosing who they want from the Bruins to help them win cup after cup as they become a dynasty down there?
That's what good organizations
do. You didn't hear about that?
The hell is going on in hockey where Florida is the hotbed of winning and Boston is the minor league team that's just going to serve... This... I don't know if there's truth to this.
But here's the thing. Not the crazy. Do you think you're even close to being what Florida is right now?
No.
So what if you trade Pasta and get some big call back that's, you know, you're years away from being what even Florida is right now?
No.
So you're like, why have pasta in his prime years when it's going to all go to waste?
Because I want to be entertained and competitive and believe I have a chance.
I'm just throwing it out. I'm just saying.
If you trade pasta, we've been talking about white flags with the Devers trade, and then if you traded Durant or Bregman, this is a white flag. It's a spoked B flag. It's a black and gold flag.
I'm just saying,
the whole
think
damn
about
thing.
It, Andy. Think.
I don't want to think. I want to watch a decent hockey team. And if you trade pasta, you're not going to be a decent hockey team. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we got to get back to the Boston Red Sox. Not only do they play at Fenway Park, not only do they have Bayo on the mound, but the leader of Driveline, who apparently runs the whole damn organization, it seems. Well, let's just say he's more reactive and angry on Twitter than Andy Hart ever was. I keep it polite and professional. Driveline people apparently don't. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons.